Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Welcome to the Podglomerate.
For everything that you were too afraid to ask at home, too embarrassed to ask at school, or was just too hard to ask your partner, welcome to the Sex Rap.
Hi, everybody, and welcome back to The Sex Rap. You're here with Spring and Andrew, and we are finally continuing our series on unseen forces.
Like gravity.
Not like gravity.
Not like gravity.
I mean, like gravity, yes, but not like gravity. We're not talking about gravity.
Yeah.
How are you feeling today, Spring? Gravity does have, you know, an impact on our sexuality, actually. So we could do an episode on it.
We could, like, interesting positions for, like, shifting weight and, yeah. Unseen forces, though. And we've decided we're going to sprinkle unseen forces over the next couple episodes to, like, round out, like, the world that we don't see that we see whenever we're trying to form relationships with people. Like, you don't notice it until you really look for it.
So today, we've got heterosexism, homophobia, and heteronormativity. Those are a lot of big words.
Yeah, there are a lot of big words. And I think it's important to talk about what each of them mean so we can talk about how they impact the health and mental health of LGBTQAI plus people and not LGBTQI plus people. And the words that we hear quite a bit, it's kind of crazy. Like in the last few years, there's been this huge major push slash drive attacking the personhood and rights of queer people in the United States and in a lot of other countries. But before we get there, I just want to, like, for definitions, when we say heterosexism, all we mean is that there's this broad societal assumption that everybody is heterosexual, everybody's having heterosexual sex, everybody's having heterosexual relationships. And because of that belief, right, people don't even notice that they have this heterosexism in them. It ends up leading to discrimination against non-heterosexual people and non-heterosexual relationships, right? So society just sort of has this blanket assumption of heterosexism. The woman asks, like, hey, I'm going on a date. People automatically assume, like, oh, what's his name? Rather than what's their name or what's her name. So it's that really broad assumption that everything, everybody, all of the relationships surrounding us are heterosexual. And then there's homophobia, right? That's a word that comes up a lot. And it's defined a lot of different ways, but overwhelmingly, it's fear, hate, and disgust that's directed at people who are in same-sex relationships. And it manifests in a lot of different ways. There's prejudice, there's discrimination, often there's violence. We know in the United States and many other countries, LGBTQ people, AI plus people, have elevated rates of aggressive attacks and hate crimes committed against them, purely because they're LGBTQAI, right? So it's fear, hatred, discomfort. And then the other part of homophobia, and we've talked about it before, some of it is like inward facing. So some people are gay, right? Or they have same-sex feelings, but they don't act on them and they end up having a lot of self-hate. We call that internalized homophobia. And then the third part, that third big word that Spring said at the beginning is heteronormativity. And that's just that very broad cultural bias that favors opposite sex relationships. It's that idea that gender is a binary, that there's only male and female, and that cultural bias and this idea that everything is just like male or female, gay or straight, marginalizes LGBTQ identities and their relationship. So all three of them sort of play together in the background. Now, there's a lot of people who are very pro-gay, right? But even if you're pro-gay, you might have some heterosexism and heteronormativity lurking in the back of your head. Because if you don't work on it, if you don't talk about it, it's one of those unseen forces, a lot like gravity.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I think, you know, heterosexism and heteronormativity are very similar. But I think in heteronormativity, it's like this larger cultural view, right, that we're really having to work to shift. Like the heterosexism, I think, is a little bit more at the individual level, and the heteronormativity is a little more at the cultural level, is one way to kind of look at how those things differ a little bit. And so, you know, we're always talking about like the individual level work that we can do to help disrupt some of these cultural things in our own lives. And then also, you know, there is work that we can do with other people. So we're going to talk about both of those things today.
So where should we start sort of deconstructing the way that these unseen forces impact people today? What do you want to talk about first?
Well, let's talk about how these impact people's emotional health and well-being, I think, so we can kind of start to understand why these things are a problem, because that's where we need to start. If we don't understand what these things are doing to other people, then why do we want to change them? So let's start there.
Sure. So when I think about like emotional and mental well-being, especially of LGBTQI people, all three of these play a driving force, right? A lot of it is due to societal expectations that are put forward that surround us. A lot of that is due to assumptions. A lot of it is due to visibility versus invisibility. And when we look at them, they have a cumulative impact on people's emotional and mental health, right? Now, your traditional like heterosexual young person, they look to society, right? And they see many, many people who look like them, who sound like them, who have relationships that look like them, that have like rights that look like them and weddings that look like them. Like it's just a really common thing for them to see across all of society. But with heterosexism and heteronormativity, like young LGBTQ plus people, I'm just going to say queer for the rest of the episode.
I was going to suggest that.
Young queer people don't see all of that, right? And when they look to the future, right, when they look to their churches and their schools and the government and their parents and their grandparents, most of the time they see people who don't look like them in relationships that don't look like theirs. And it can lead to feeling excluded, right? And if we look at education in schools or the books that we read, like if you think of the entire canon of literature that young people read from kindergarten all the way through college, usually including, you know, intro college, et cetera, like there aren't gay characters and there aren't gay weddings and there aren't gay relationships and there's not gay drama and you don't watch gay movies. Because there's this assumption, right, that heteronormativity is the assumption that all of this, there's this huge bias. There's this assumption that everything's heterosexual. And it causes harm because you don't have people to look up to. There aren't people to share your story with. And then if you are a young queer person, right, and you're starting to live your story, you have your lived experience and you have these relationships, there's judgment that comes out as well. Right. And we see those judgments happen in a lot of different ways. Like when I was a young gay person, like, is this just a phase? Or, well, you dated Jean in high school. Why don't you go back and date her again? For my story, like people made these assumptions about me that even though I was coming out as a gay person and having gay experiences and gay relationships, that, oh, it's just a phase. Like you'll end up straight just like everybody else. And I wasn't taken seriously. I wasn't educated about what my relationships were supposed to look like. And you're sort of starting on this weird blank page where you sort of get to forge ahead, which sounds nice in theory, but you're going ahead without all of those supports that make our relationships like smooth. Like all of that smoothness is sort of missing because of heterosexism and heteronormativity in those relationships.
And young people don't need to trailblaze this. Like, it's not their burden to carry, right? We've already done a lot of this work, but the problem with the heterosexism, the heteronormativity that is still there, it makes them feel like they do have to do that. And it's like this broad overview of their lives that Andrew was talking about that can seem daunting, but it's also like prickles them every single day. Like every single day, there are these assumptions, these microaggressions. Like, for example, when we were talking about, you know, someone assumes you're going on a date with someone of a different gender than you, or if someone assumes even your pronouns or assumes anything about you, every time those little assumptions happen in this realm of heterosexism, of heteronormativity, then they are these little microaggressions that someone is experiencing over and over. And every time those little prickles get under your skin more and more, and they hurt more and more, and they make you feel like an outsider, they make you feel like you need to change, they make you feel like you don't belong to the larger culture. And all of those things cause depression, cause anxiety, cause extreme emotional disruption.
And it's not just microaggressions, right? If we look, because society has all of these biases in favor of heterosexual relationships, heterosexual people, like there's a lot of bullying that happens that we see for young people and adults as well. Like queer adults and queer young people are bullied pretty much every single day, bullied by people in their schools, in their churches, in their homes, bullied by their parents and their siblings, being told like, just act normal, or just get in the closet, or just be like everybody else. I can't believe that you're doing these things that we label as not normal. And that bullying does cause negative outcomes. Spring said depression and anxiety and emotional dysregulation. But if we look, young people, young queer people have the highest rates of suicidal ideation and suicide attempts, not because there's something wrong with being LGBT, but because heteronormativity, heterosexism, and homophobia's influence in their lives surrounding them make them feel outcast, make them feel pariah, make them feel like there is no support for them to continue living their life the way that they want to live it. And they don't feel like they can live it as a lie, like living it as a closet, living it pretending to be somebody else. So there's immense emotional toll that they face when they're kids. And then it continues through their life as well. Like, you know, I go to meetings sometimes and people ask me how my wife is. Or one of my favorite stories is there's another faculty member at my university, Claire. Hi, I know you listen. I love you. This is my shout out to you. Claire has the same last name that I do, and advisors in her unit at the university and my unit were telling students, go take Andrew's wife, go take Dr. Porter's wife's class, because we have the same last name. They just assumed. Yeah. If you think that I am a heterosexual, your gaydar is at level zero out of like negative five. But that's where it hits. Like, I laugh at it now, but still for a moment, I'm like, well, I've been in a relationship with the same person for decades, but the world assumes because a woman has the same last name as me and that we are friends, that we're married. That's what heteronormativity looks like in society, right? And it does cause harm. I'm able to laugh it out because, you know, I've been in this role for a very long time and I thought it was kind of funny. But for somebody who didn't have the support and security in themselves and their position, it could be like, do I have to come out of the closet again? Like, who do I have to go scream from the mountaintops today? Like, hey, hold up. Like, you are mislabeling me. You're making me, my identity, my people, my culture, my relationship invisible. And that's what heteronormativity does.
And it does really impact people in different ways too, right? Like, depending on how much power you have in a situation, it's going to impact you differently. So if Andrew was new at this university and he was just starting there and he didn't have a lot of friends or support in the university, he might also feel like he couldn't speak up to a response like that, right? And so, you know, these things change in our lives, but it's especially important for us to think about people who are younger, people who don't have as much experience and support yet, and how strong the impact can be on them when these assumptions are made about their lives.
Yeah. I have students ask me sometimes, like, well, why are you out in class? Why do you talk about it? Like, I come out to my students very early in class, like mostly as a joke. Like, if you have not identified yet that this very flamingly gay person was gay, like I make the same gaydar joke I just made. But then I ask them, how many gay or LGBTQ faculty have you had? Like, how many professors or faculty over your whole life have you had who are out and gay? And the class sort of sits there most of the time, and it can be like 100 students, and most of the time we'll say none. And I know that's not true, right? Over those students' lives, they've had other queer faculty, but they're not out, which means that if there are gay kids in those classes, like those gay kids kind of just assume like, well, I can't be successful as a professor. I can't be a teacher. I can't be in this role, because heteronormativity really forces a lot of people to be silent for the reason Spring was saying. Some people are afraid to do it. If you don't have power, like, it can really put your job and your life at risk. But we do need to take a short break. When we get back, we're going to keep talking about different ways that heteronormativity, homophobia, and heterosexism impact our lives as unseen forces. Thanks for listening, everyone. Welcome back to our episode. Today, we are talking about the way that heteronormativity, homophobia, and heterosexism, those forces impact ourselves, our sexual lives. And so far, we've really been talking about like mental health, but I think it's also important for us to talk about like those institutions. I've mentioned them a couple times, but we have to look at the kind of laws and policies out there that either create barriers for people's happiness or help them do that.
And these are huge. When we put a policy into place that doesn't allow people to be their full selves, to have rights that other people have, that is banning even, you know, speaking about their identities, all of these policies do the most harm. Like, it is the strongest amount of harm that can be done, because it makes it scary for people to stand up for others as well. So it means, like, not only are we like taking away rights, not only are we like creating problems for individuals who identify as these different groups that are being marginalized, but then we also have, now it becomes illegal, or, you know, it's illegal in some way, you know, for someone to even like speak up about it, to try to change it, to start to get around it, right? And that is like the most damaging thing we can do. It's like we're silencing everybody when we start to enact these policies.
And we can see some of these policies, like book bannings, where they ban books that are either written by or showcase LGBTQI queer characters. A whole bunch of states are trying to ban pride flags or pride clothing on public buildings or in schools. So once again, it's taking people's ability to identify and find people like them, people to look up to, those people who have already trailblazed successful lives, and sort of hiding it on purpose. Now, we know most of these laws don't actually help anybody. These policies are not meant to help people. They're meant expressly to hurt other people. There is a state senator from Oklahoma who just said a couple weeks ago, like, we want to get these filth out of the state. And the filth he was talking about are LGBTQ people, like homophobia in action, trying to pass laws to exclude people or cause harm to people in society. There's a lot of no promo homo laws. I know it sounds ridiculous, but no promo homo laws are laws that anything that promotes or anything that highlights successful, happy LGBTQ people is being made illegal across the United States, in other countries as well. So whenever you have a public policy or a societal institution that all of a sudden says, like, this kind of person is not okay and we're not going to support them, or if you support them, you're complicit and you can get in trouble for doing that, this one's pretty much a no-brainer, and how this creates all kinds of harm, but it also perpetuates homophobia. And what we see are increased rates of violence and violent attacks and homophobic rhetoric that is used to attack LGBTQI plus people, right? Because so these policies are really important.
Right. The policy is inherently saying homophobia is okay, right? That is what the policy says in virtue. So then it enables people to be more homophobic. It allows them to be more homophobic. It supports homophobia. So then we see more violence against queer people. We see more attacks. We see all of this starting to snowball. So what's happening in the policy environment is so important to pay attention to. And when these bills are being introduced, even, you know, when they're not actually in place yet, is the most important time to take action, to speak up, to start to organize, to build with other people in other communities that feel strongly about it, because it will snowball and snowball and snowball, and it becomes more and more supportive of homophobia in our culture.
I mean, we see everyday manifestations of homophobia and heterosexism based on the kind of policies that are being suggested all the time. Like, I remember not so long ago, everybody was telling gay jokes, so they would say, "That's so gay." And that's mostly fallen out of common use. Like, you don't hear it quite as much. It's just like, "Hey, brah," is all I hear now. Like, "Hey, brah, hey, brah, hey, brah."
That has like a heteronormative... Huge slant. Yeah.
It's wildly heteronormative. It's like the new no homo, right? But if we look around, there are a ton of gay jokes. There are a ton of like microaggressions. There are a ton of ways that people use language that harm queer people. But these harms have a lot of other real world everyday manifestations. I just read a research study that showed that queer people are less valued in the workplace. And if you have like a gay man and a straight man with the same background, same requirements, same resume, they typically offer gay people $8,000 to $10,000 less for the same position. So they're compensated less. So there's like a lower quality of life and a lower amount of income over the lifespan as well. And that's because these policies make people think that gay people are of less value. Because that's the point of these policies, right? Like they offer less, they are worth less, they are less. And it comes out in a lot of different ways. It comes out in housing policies, fair housing policies. It comes out in the way that banks will give loans to people. It comes out in terms of pay. And the thing is that people who are offering those paychecks or, you know, creating those jobs, they're not necessarily explicitly homophobic, right? They might have gay friends or gay family members, but it's that heteronormativity and heterosexist bias that causes them, without even thinking about it, right? This is in the back of their head. This is, you know, you've lived 40 years and you've had all of these negative messages about gay people sort of earworm their way into your head. And then when you're making decisions, unless you're doing work and energy and effort to undo, to unlearn the negative, you're acting on it just based on a lifetime of experiences in a world that's very heteronormative and heterosexist. And I mean, it doesn't matter where we look in society. We can see this sort of these everyday manifestations happening, right? We see it politics, we see it policy, we see it in institutions, we see it in hiring, we see it in jobs, we see it in parenting and child rearing. We see it pretty much everywhere. Heterosexism and homophobia sort of have created a two-tier system where queer people sit one step under heterosexual people, and you know it, right? These policies are there to, like, we know we're being kept down simply because of the relationships that we're engaging in, the people who we love and that we're attracted to. So we see these manifestations happen everywhere, and it causes harm at the end of the day.
You have to speak up every time you see something like this, right? So when you're in your work situation, whether it's a fast food restaurant or whether it's a high powered company, right? It doesn't matter where you're working. Like in these environments, it's all of our jobs to support everyone and to make sure that people aren't experiencing bias. So when you hear someone assume pronouns or assume someone's orientation, you can step in. You can say like, "Oh, why don't we ask who they're going on a date with?" Or why don't we ask them what their pronouns are before we assume? Like, and it doesn't even matter if you think the person's assumption is wrong or right. Like, you don't need to even consider like, "Oh, is that person gay? Is that person straight?" You don't even need to think about that because we need to be approaching everybody in the same way. We need to be offering this to everybody. That's what is making these places safe for everyone. So anytime you hear someone make any assumption about someone's sexuality, about their gender, step in, challenge it. If you are in a workplace and you're able to like be impacting policies, be impacting, you know, hiring processes. Like it's also up to you to make sure that you are challenging the group's opinions on these things. Like when you're looking at a policy document and it says he or she, like you need to put the word they in there. You need to like put in the word partner instead of spouse even. Like there's all sorts of ways that like our language is so important, and it's important to continually challenge these norms and to do it verbally and through written policies. And then like when you see it in the hiring process, like look to see what, you know, what everybody should be offered at this rate, and then make sure people are getting the same offers. And if they're not, ask questions about it. Like all of these things are able to be impacted by questions, by people speaking up. And so it becomes all of our jobs to continually do this so that we're creating better spaces for everyone to prosper.
And we need to start this early too. When we really look at it, like if you ask a young person to draw a picture of a firefighter, they draw a man. If you ask a young person to draw a picture of a nurse, they draw a woman. If you ask people to do all those, like if you ask, everything is very gendered, everything is very heteronormative. So we have to start working on that early. If you want to do a real fun experiment on how much heterosexism and how much homophobia there is, if you have access to an AI bot like ChatGPT and you can have it draw pictures, if you have it draw like successful couples, or if you have it draw happy couples, or if you have it draw any of those things, it will never draw you a gay couple or a lesbian couple or a non-monogamous couple unless you ask it to explicitly, right? Like, I think ChatGPT is one of those places, like all of the different chatbots, because they scraped the internet for all of their information, they sucked up all the heteronormativity and all of the heterosexism. And it's a really fun little example. You can go there and ask it to do all of these things, and it will always highlight heterosexual couples as happy couples and successful couples. And if you ask it to show a wedding, it always will show heterosexual couples. And that's what heteronormativity looks like. And we do need to combat it in our individual lives. It needs to start young, needs to start, you know, when kids are 2, 3, 4 years old, because that's how you start undoing 40 years of learning that straight is great and everything else is bad. We do need to take another short break. When we get back, I think we should talk a little bit about education, because we're sort of heading in that direction, and then close out our episode with some final thoughts about what we can do to challenge this. Thank you for listening, everybody. We will be right back. Welcome back to The Sex Wrap. You're here with Spring and Andrew, and today we are talking about forces around us that impact ourselves, our sexual health, and our sexual relationships. And so far, we've been talking about heteronormativity, heterosexism, and homophobia, and how they impact people in their lives. I'd just like to take a second and say, while they very directly negatively impact the lives of queer people, heterosexism, homophobia negatively impact heterosexual people as well, right? If we look at them very much, most of the time, men don't have a lot of friends, like heterosexual men don't have a lot of friends. They don't hug. They're afraid to talk about their emotions. They're afraid to be vulnerable. And they are afraid of all of those things because they're afraid of being perceived as being gay. And if we look, there's a lot of harm that's caused to heterosexual men surrounding heteronormativity and homophobia, the lack of choices, the lack of options in their lives, right? So it hurts queer people directly, but it hurts everybody else indirectly because of like the really narrow path that heteronormativity creates for people. If there's a man and he wants to be an artist, or if there's a man and he wants to paint his fingernails and he's heterosexual, think of how much negative repercussions or negative feedback he gets in his life surrounding something as simple as painted nails. That's what heteronormativity and heterosexism do. If a man wants to have longer hair, all of a sudden people start asking questions about them. Or if a woman wants to wear pants to work, actually that was heterosexism and heteronormativity just a few years ago.
It's really crazy how much this can lock people into like really rigid behaviors and roles that they don't even really realize. Like it limits, like we're talking about heterosexual people here who think these types of things might not impact them, but it inhibits their ability to self-express in so many ways, their appearance, their behavior, their creativity even. And it locks you into these things that you don't even realize it's happening. You're just like, oh, this is what I'm supposed to do. And those supposed to's and those shoulds like do really start to make a cage for you. And it's so hard for people to break out of that when they don't even realize that these unseen forces are creating this for them, right? And you were talking about like nail polish. Like I had someone just told me yesterday that they were on a Zoom interview and it was going really well. And then they started like talking with their hands and it like immediately went bad. And this person is male identifying. And he said he realized afterward that he had nail polish on. And he thought that that was exactly what happened. They saw the nail polish and it like changed the whole tone of the interview and he didn't get a response, you know? And these things are real. Like these things do happen all the time. And it is because of all of these assumptions that go with it, right? And And that is like, that is something that hurts everybody. It does not just hurt people that are queer. And so we want to really expand this idea of how these forces hurt everyone and why that is so important for us to try to break through so that everyone can be their authentic selves and express their own uniqueness in like full beauty.
For those of you who are 21 plus, one of the places where I saw this happen all the time when I used to go to bars, so a lot of you don't drink and that's fine. You never have to drink. Alcohol is not good for you, et cetera, but drinks that are fruity are delicious. And a lot of times, like, men won't even order what they like to drink because they don't want to be perceived as feminine or gay. They won't order a pink drink or a Cosmo or a fruity drink. Instead, they'll drink something that they don't even like just so they look like they cut themselves out of enjoying. I had a male student, previously say in front of the class how much they like musicals and people giggled at them. And this was a heterosexual student who liked musicals who then felt like they couldn't talk about liking musicals. That box that Spring talked about is really narrow and it's hard to live in. And there are negative outcomes as well. In the United States, men live 5 to 6 years less than women. And most of that is because of this heteronormativity and this stress and this pressure for them to act in this very, very specific way. Like most of, like all of you who have a dad who are listening today, most of your dads probably haven't been to the doctor in the last year or 2 years or 5 years or 10 years. They won't ask for directions when they're lost, or if they're at Lowe's trying to buy something, they won't ask for help because they don't want to be seen as weak or womanly. All right. I said we were going to talk about kids and kid impacts. We already were talking about it a lot, but for me, there's a couple really big highlights. We know that most people in the United States get at best poor sexuality education. And we know that if you are queer, identified, non-binary, anything other than heterosexual, even if you get decent sex education, it's terrible because it doesn't include you. It doesn't talk about your risks or behaviors or how you form relationships. And it sets you up for some real danger down the road as well. Right? Because it's important to learn about your sex and sexual health. I mean, we have like almost 300 episodes. So if you've missed out, we have a backlog. And that's part of the reason Spring and I started this podcast in the first place, because so many people were missing out on inclusive, important sex education across the entire lifespan. And we know, right, because of heteronormativity, homophobia, and heterosexism, even in parts of this country, even in parts around the world that are pro-gay and have really great laws protecting queer people, their sex ed suffers. It doesn't include their stories or their examples. It won't talk about anal sex, or it won't talk about what sex looks like for women who have sex with other women. They're just completely left out of that picture. And when you're left out of the picture altogether, you don't learn about the risks. You don't learn about how to protect yourself. You don't learn about anything. Like, if the only thing you're learning about in your sex ed class is you need to prevent pregnancy, and you're two young men, you don't have to worry about pregnancy, so you have nothing to think about. And you're putting yourself at really quite considerable risk for STIs and HIV and all of these other issues that can arise because you're invisible, right? No one has ever talked to you about your needs and what might happen whenever you are sexually active. And that's not it. It doesn't tell you how to have healthy sexual relationships. It doesn't tell you what dating looks like. It doesn't tell you the difference between a hookup app like Grindr and then potentially finding a way to online date where you're going to have a long-term relationship. All of that is missing altogether. And it leads to a lot of negative consequences when it comes to sexually transmitted infections and building healthy relationships, right? Once again, instead of learning healthy steps on how to do those things in a classroom with a professional with evidence, you're trailblazing and you're starting out from scratch, and you might be learning about it from your friends who are also learning it from scratch. Like, I mean, I love that we turn to our friends for sexual health and relationship health information, and they're a great place some of the time. They're also full of really bad information a lot of the time.
And, you know, I think a lot of these things are true for all young people because we don't have great comprehensive sexuality education in most schools. So unfortunately, that's true for a lot of people, but it's especially true for queer young people because it is in the schools that do have some information, they're still missing the queer pieces. So it becomes that the people who don't identify as queer have at least a little bit of understanding and support, although that's not always the case either. So the importance really is for you know, comprehensive sexuality education to be in all of our schools and to be a part of our full societal's like value system as well. You know, the more that all adults are more comfortable talking about sex and answering questions for others, you know, then the more young people can look up to them and can have their questions answered and have safe spaces to go. And so it is not just part of what we need in the school systems, but it is like a broader societal shift in being able to have comprehensive sexuality education available to everybody that everybody understands and can communicate with each other about.
There's really good news on that front too. When we look at Americans, there have been many polls over the last 20 plus years, and very consistently, it's like more than 85% of Americans think that comprehensive sexuality education that is inclusive is important in our schools. Unfortunately, that squeaky 15% who doesn't want it is very loud, and they pretty continually have prevented us from having that kind of inclusive sexuality education. So once again, the call to action here is to be active. It is to use your voice. It is to go to school board meetings and talk about how it's really important. If you're a parent and you're listening, making sure that you go to PTA meetings and school board meetings, and you'll feel really uncomfortable. We have lots of episodes about feeling less comfortable talking about sex, but saying things about how it is really important for young people to have exploration of values and sexual health inside of classroom spaces where they have those conversations with people who are trained and their peers. There's a lot of other things that we can do, though. If we talk about education and youth development, things as simple as making sure that you have your pronouns, like if you have a name tag at an event, always write your pronouns down. If you are cisgendered and heterosexual, you still have pronouns, and writing them down sort of creates a stage where everybody feels a lot more free. If you're on Zoom calls, I make sure that I always have my pronouns after my name inside of my Zoom call as well. There's a lot of other things. Once again, we talked about societal attacks. There's attacks right now. Multiple states are passing laws where if a teacher uses a child's pronouns that are different from their sex assigned at birth, it's a felony. So we're not talking, if you're a teacher in one of those states, you need to protect yourself, obviously. But overwhelmingly, we are not teachers in those states. And we're the ones who can start changing that cultural bias. And sometimes it's really simple. It's just being, these are my pronouns and this is what it looks like. Sometimes it's making sure that we use really inclusive language and speech. Like whenever I talk about pregnancy, I talk about women and trans men, because both of those groups can be pregnant. And I don't make it special or anything else. I just say, oh yeah, so women and trans men in this situation. So you can do it, right? It's just making sure you build a little bit of inclusion and then not making a big deal about it, just making it part of the sentence and moving on. And if people want to respond, that's great. You have a conversation about, I want to make sure everybody has access to this information because I think it's important. And then you continue. And if someone challenges you and say, well, I don't think we should talk about that, that's where we see homophobia sort of like coming in and trying to interrupt that conversation and trying to prevent people who need it from having the kind of information they need to make the best possible choices for them, their sexual relationships, and their sexual health. Whew, that's a lot of words. All right. We could keep talking about this all day. This force is huge. It's all around us. Most of the time, we don't talk about it. Now, if you are interested in seeing if you have any bias in heteronormativity or homophobia, there is a really cool online tool that I highly urge everybody to do. It's called the Harvard Implicit Bias Test. We'll leave a link to them in the show notes, so you'll be able to just click and do it. Where all you do is you go to Harvard's website, you know, the Harvard, you know, top a cat top university, and you go and you take a pretty quick little test where you just hit right or left as it asks you some questions. And what it does is it helps to show you where you have different kinds of biases. These biases are not your fault, right? These biases are baked into the world that we live. From the moment you start watching a child cartoon or reading a children's book all the way until the time you're done with college, the vast majority of the spaces we're in are going to have heteronormativity and heterosexism as part of that experience. The cool thing about the Harvard bias is it gives you a starting point to let you know where your bias lies. And once you know it's there, you can't just be like, all right, I'm going to work on it. Like we've been saying all episode, once you know you have some of these biases, you have to do something about it. And the best way to challenge these biases is to get into communities and spaces where you're going to be interacting with people who you have bias against, like this bias in the back of your head, not active bias. You might not be homophobic. You might love gay people, but you still have these biases, right? You might love queer people. and interacting, working, serving, doing charity, doing fun events, because that's really what how you break them down, like being a part of those communities, actively working with those people. And those Harvard bias tests are a great way to sort of get a snapshot of what your brain looks like today. And then you take it a year later after you do some work, and what you'll find is that you've started to challenge those biases, because it takes a long time to undo all of the programming of your whole life. But you can
and
do it.
They have these implicit bias tests for all different types of biases. So you can choose the ones you want to do. I mean, I would recommend doing all of them at some point, because the more information you have about your implicit biases, the more that you can start to challenge them. But they have ones for sexuality and gender and transgender issues. And then they have like a lot of other different race and ethnicity ones and age. So when you go through all of these, you know, you can choose the different ones and look at them. And we're strongly recommending, you know, do as many of these as you can so you have this information. Because the reason it's called implicit bias is because you don't realize you have it. It's implicit. It isn't explicit. It isn't being shown very clearly, but it impacts you and your choices. And so once you make the implicit explicit, then you can do something about it. So when you see, you know, your scores, when you see like what the results are from the test, then you can say, okay, now I know how to take action. Now I know what these implicit biases are. They're explicit now. Now I can say, this is what I need to do. And the answer is always being in spaces with more people that are different than you. That's always what the answer is, because the more often you are exposed to people that are different from you, that think differently than you, that are different in many ways, the more that you start to understand, oh, we all deserve respect. We are all people. We are all amazing. And it is really starting to immerse yourself in different cultural values that come with different groups of people, that you start to really start to change those things within yourself.
So I think today we should end our episode with a call to action, right? Sometimes we talk about our deep thoughts. Sometimes we have conclusion. But I think today I want to invite everybody who's listening, number one, it doesn't matter where you sit on the LGBTQAI plus heterosexual spectrum. There's always opportunities to educate yourself. We have a whole bunch of episodes. And over the next month, we're going to have quite a few more queer episodes. So do some research, do some reading, watch some movies, get involved. But on top of that, there's a lot of advocacy efforts that need to happen right now in the world. There are many attacks on queer peoples. So to support LGBT plus communities, you need to do it in tangible ways. And you can do it with your vote. You can do it with a pride parade. We talk about what pride looks like and how everybody can participate. Talk about what you can do in the spaces that you're in to make sure that they're more inclusive. If you're on a Zoom call, do you have your pronouns? If there's someone with fingernails, you compliment them. Like, there's a million little things that you can do on the individual level. There's also policy level things that you can do, things like research candidates who support diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging, research candidates who support bills that include comprehensive sexuality education, and make sure that you amplify that voice, not only by voting for them, but working for them, telling your friends about them, explicitly stating why you're voting for a candidate. Too much when we talk about voting in the United States, it's really blank, like, well, this is my party's candidate, I'm voting for them. And that's fine. We support everybody using your power of voting, but it's always much stronger if you're trying to convince people, this is my candidate and this is my party's candidate, but really I'm voting for them because these are their stances that ensure that the world is better for queer people and for heterosexual people alike. So there's a lot that you can do individually, but also those policy pieces. Any final thoughts or calls to action, Spring?
I just got a little teary-eyed listening to you, because it's like, you know, this is like our lives work. And also it's like, it's just so important. You know, we can't overstate the importance of all these little actions that everybody takes and like how much they can really build and change our society. Like these are the things we all do that can create tidal shifts, like huge shifts. And it takes everybody doing these little things. And so We are asking you, what can you commit to? What can you do? And, you know, maybe even just write down, you know, in your phone or on a sheet of paper nearby, like a couple of things that you're willing to do right now, and set that as an intention. Because when we set intentions like that, we're more likely to do things. So I'm going to ask you, what can you do? What can you commit to? And thanks for helping.
Yeah, thank you for helping, everybody. If you want to see what other people are intending to do, check out our Instagram account. We'll be having some posts and some information in our story. So if you don't have any ideas, we'll be asking other people for their ideas, and you can probably get some insight or some new actions there as well. But thank you for listening to the episode today, everybody. These forces that surround us are huge, but we can challenge them, right? So if you have any follow-up questions about this episode or any other questions about sex or sexual health or relationships, we would love to hear from you. You can call us at 413-IRAPID. You can send us an email. We are the...
For everything that you were too afraid to ask at home, too embarrassed to ask at school, or just too...
Music for this episode provided by the ever elusive and mysterious... Breakmaster Cylinder.
The Podglomerate. A sonic universe.